the University of Mississippi, the one and only one, the flagship university.
Now time for another edition of the Rebel Rise Live podcast, presented by Rebels 247 of the 24/7 Sports Network. Complete coverage of Ole Miss athletics and recruiting news from the Rebels 247 staff, David Johnson, Michael Court, and Dave Bevin. Rebel Rise Live is also available free in the iTunes store. Now, here's your host, David Johnson.
Today. Welcome to this edition of the Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson along with Michael Quirk and Dave Bevin, and lots of stuff going on in the world of Ole Miss athletics. An 11 a.m. start for the Diamond Rebels today as Tennessee Martin is in town. It is school day at Swayze Field. Some 6,000 area school children expected to be in the stands rooting on an Ole Miss baseball team, Michael, that is now ranked number 6 in the nation by at least one national poll. A consensus top 10 team now is Ole Miss. And, you know, I want to flash back to about a month ago when we were having these conversations about Mike Bianco's Rebels. And they seem to have a chip on their shoulder about being snubbed in some quarters, at least nationally, even in the SEC coaches poll where they were picked to finish fifth in the SEC West. And, wow, what a start out of the gates, 19-2. They took the series from Tennessee in Knoxville this weekend. And things just don't seem quite ready to slow down for this group. Michael, your take on their 4-1 week last week and what they have ahead for them this week.
You're absolutely right. This team is not getting they didn't get the respect in the preseason, and that's something that they paid attention to. That's something that they've brought up and some that's been chipped on their shoulder. And there are still some in certain quarters that aren't giving them a ton of respect even now. There were some announcers for the game on Friday who apparently said, yeah, Ole Miss, or they were talking about the favorites of the SEC, and they said, you know, that SEC has a lot of great teams, Florida, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, LSU, and while they were watching Ole Miss play and just left Ole Miss out of the conversation. And so there are still some that are refusing to put Ole Miss in that sort of conversation. And it was an interesting weekend in the SEC. LSU, of course, lost 2-3 at home to unranked Alabama, and Vanderbilt lost 2-3 at home to Mississippi State. Texas A&M dropped one to Auburn, who is undoubtedly going to finish last in the league this year. It was a bit of a strange weekend, but Ole Miss goes on the road, takes 4-5, which anytime you can take 4-5, especially over a team who took 2 over you last year in UAB, and then winning your SEC road series 2-1. I mean, that's certainly a solid week for you. Then going forward, of course, you have a big RPI weekend against South Carolina, who's number 3 in the RPI and just took 2-3 from Arkansas. And, of course, is sitting at 20-2. So that's going to be a monster series Thursday to Saturday. And then, of course, you have Education Day. Mimosas will be flowing instead of beers, I guess, because it's an 11 a.m. start today. And it's certainly going to be nice to finally get back to Swayze, and I'm sure this team is ready to put on a show for the home fans.
As we mentioned, 19-2, they take 2-3 at Tennessee, and then certainly the loss crushing a walk off hit with the Volunteers' only win in that series. But you know, the thing that seems to be the difference, and of course we're just getting into SEC play, is that the Rebels are finding success in these midweek games this year, where in years past they haven't. And, you know, is there a reason for that? Is it that this midweek pitching is going to be very good in the future? Are they putting more emphasis on these midweek games? What is the deal with Ole Miss's success in the middle of the week?
Yeah, Ole Miss is certainly – it's been – you know, it's been a combination of that team that just really doesn't quit and that comes back and really plays well toward the end of the game and really doesn't say quit. And you've seen them come back against Arkansas State as well as Southeast Missouri. And Ole Miss has really found a midweek ace in Andy Pagnozzi. James McArthur will get the nod today. Andy Pagnozzi's pitched so well in the midweek, whether it's starting or coming out of relief, and I think you'll see more of him coming up later on this season, pitching out of the midweek.
You mentioned James McArthur, and McArthur's 2-0 in his own right, and pitched well in his last start versus UAB, one run on 5 hits in the start to get the win. ERA's a bit high at 6.06. He's worked 16 and a third innings so far. 6'7" kid that certainly looks like he has got a very bright future with Ole Miss.
Absolutely. He got off to some struggles early on, which, of course, we have to remember that he suffered a broken foot in the fall. It was his landing foot. Which, you know, that can throw off your timing a little bit, and you know, it's understandable to have a little bit of a rough start, but he's come on lately and pitched really well in his last two starts, and there are a lot of high expectations for McArthur. Anyone you asked in the preseason, whether it was a player, a coach, or someone else within the program, was saying, "Hey, you got to watch out for this James McArthur kid. He's going to be really good for Ole Miss for a couple of years," and so. You know, it's really a positive sign for Bianco to see him pitching well, and he really has his command under control. He's not walking a lot of batters now. It's all just a matter of sort of limiting damage and not allowing the big inning, which hurt him early on in the year.
All right, Dave Bevin, what about this scenario? What about the powder blue voodoo, so to speak? The Rebels haven't lost a game in those powder blues. Some like them, some don't. I love them. I think they had a little splash. You know, you look at some photographs last weekend when they were playing Tennessee in the powder blues and Tennessee in the orange. It was just a colorful, a fiesta of color on the baseball field. But they haven't lost in these things. What say you, Dave Bevin? You know, baseball's a superstitious game. Is there some powder blue voodoo going on for this Ole Miss baseball team?
I think it is, David. You know, maybe that powder blue is a good luck charm for the Rebels, and I agree with you. I like them. And so Sean Johnson, he's been getting all the starts in the powder blues. And, you know, in the weekend rotation overall between Sean Johnson, Brady Bramlett, and Chad Smith, they've been pitching very well. And if you just go by the numbers, you know, Sean Johnson, he is leading that trio right now with the 1.96 ERA and you know, a 3-0 start to the season. So I would agree with you, David. Powder blue, good luck charm. I think they should stick with it.
And of course, you know, the wall that the Ole Miss pitching staff has put up that Michael Quirk so eloquently referenced to Donald Trump's political campaign yesterday. The wall with the bullpen. The Ole Miss bullpen has rarely disappointed this season. Of course, a tough loss at Tennessee that could be attributed to the bullpen. But really and truly, the pitching was great that game. The offense just wasn't there. But, you know, everything looking like Mike Bianco's team has all the elements to be a contender inside the SEC West. Again, a big series this weekend with South Carolina. But first, Ole Miss with an 11 a.m. start today against Tennessee Martin, and as we mentioned, James McArthur going to the mound for Ole Miss. He'll be facing Jake Patsner, 1-1, 13.50 earned run average for a Martin team. Folks, it's just not very good. Any way you shake it, they were swept by Tennessee Tech over the weekend. Went 1-3 last week with their only win coming over Alabama A&M. That's an 11 a.m. start. It is on the SEC Network Plus. Richard Cross and David DeLucci, who has been a guest of this podcast, they'll have the play-by-play and the color commentary. As always, you can listen to it on the Ole Miss Radio Network as well. Well, guys, spring football practice got back in full swing yesterday, and open the entire practice, open to the media, so got to watch the Rebels go after it for a couple of hours, and I was kind of struck by how physical the practices were. I mean, I'm telling you, they were busting butt on both sides of the ball. Some guys that stood out to me yesterday watching Miles Hartsfield. We've written about him a whole lot. True freshman, prep school transfer out of the state of New Jersey, wearing number 15 in the Navy jersey, and he's easy to spot out there when the Rebels are going through the team portion of practice. Picked off a Jason Pellerin pass yesterday. Pellerin threw into double coverage, and there was Miles Hartsfield just waiting to take it. Drew some accolades from Hugh Freeze after practice. So Miles Hartsfield, one to watch. And I'm going to tell you, the kid on the offensive side of the football yesterday that had a phenomenal practice, and Ole Miss fans are going to love to hear this. It's a redshirt freshman running back by the name of Eric Swinney. Let me tell you something, folks. He got to go in yesterday at practice, and he can juke, and he can jive, and he will flat run over your tail. Swinney is probably going to be the most versatile all-purpose type back. And when I say all-purpose, I mean a guy that can race you to the edge and win, a guy that will stick it up between the tackles and punish you as you try to tackle him. He's over 200 pounds now. Hugh Freeze told us that yesterday following the practice. And I got to tell you, excited about Eric Swinney. And I think for the first time since Hugh Freeze arrived in Oxford, Mississippi, Ole Miss is going to have talent and depth at the running back position that is going to make the run game a factor. And Eric Swinney is pushing. I'm telling you, he's pushing Akeem Judd. He is pushing Jordan Wilkins. He is pushing and probably surpassed Eugene Brayson. And this kid, you know, of course, we didn't get to see him last year because we found out he had a stress fracture in his leg prior to the opening of fall camp. So he missed all of last season or probably would not have redshirted. Let me tell you, folks, he looks ready. You're going to be excited to watch Eric Swinney run the football. And, Dave, you were involved in covering Swinney's recruitment to Ole Miss a little bit. It's really no surprise, is it, that Eric Swinney is emerging. He's in the process of emerging as perhaps a very dependable playmaker. Let me tell you something. He's the kind of kid you'll give the ball to 20 times a game, and he'll tote that mail for you, but he still has that explosiveness. He has that stop-and-go gear where I mean, he's going full blast. Here comes a tackler. He can stop on a dime, boom, and accelerate, and he's gone. It's no surprise, is it, Dave, considering what he did in high school?
Not at all, David. And what during our coverage in his recruitment, David, even, you know, reviewing his highlight film, it's no different than the report that you gave of how he looked in practice yesterday. And, you know, he's one of those all, you know, all-around backs that can juke, jive, and do it all and flat-out run over you. And I remember his recruitment and, you know, Hugh Freeze, when they identified Swinney, they identified him, and that was the primary back. They had all their focus on Swinney. He was committed to Ole Miss for a long time leading into National Signing Day. And, you know, he had a lot of other offers in there. Kind of reminded you of you know, a Devon Penamon. He had, you know, other schools pursuing him, and in the end, he stood by with the Rebels. And Hugh Freeze, that was his back for that 2015 class. And like you said, you know, as talented as he was, he probably would not have redshirted last year. And that stress fracture, you know, it forced the redshirt on him. But it seems like he's come in and determined and ready to compete, and he wants to excel up in that depth chart, and he's showing that.
Well, during his recruitment, the Rebels told Swinney, "You are the guy we want. We will not recruit another running back in this class," and they held true to their word on that. Swinney stuck with him. He committed very early in the process, almost a year out, if not more than a year out. And man, it just looks like a match made in heaven. I'm going to tell you, I'm not bloviating on this. Eric Swinney is carrying that football with authority. You remember those two runs in the Egg Bowl where Akeem Judd plowed over a Mississippi State guy, and Jordan Wilkins nailed one trying to tackle him. Do you guys remember that, Michael? Y'all remember those two plays? I watched Derek Sweeney do that several times yesterday to the first team defense. And I'm just excited to see what he looks like. And remember, he wasn't out there at the beginning of spring practice this year. It's still kind of – they didn't want to rush anything back. And now, boom, he's out there full blast, and he looks like a million bucks. I think he's worth getting excited for. So, too, is Miles Hartsfield. Those two guys out of the group of freshmen look to be the guys that that you're going to be most excited about this fall. Let me say that. Interesting yesterday, the Indiana Hoosiers in town, and they'll be here until Wednesday. Of course, the connection there is newly hired Indiana defensive coordinator Tom Allen is former Ole Miss linebackers coach, and he was with Hugh Freeze at Arkansas State in his first two seasons here in Oxford. And Indiana head coach Kevin Wilson also at practice, along with Allen and the entire Hoosier defensive staff. They're down here checking out what Ole Miss does defensively, doing a little workshopping with the Rebels from now until Wednesday. And I had a chance to chat with Coach Allen yesterday. Great guy, one of my all-time favorites. Got a glowingly bright future in the coaching business. And he kind of gave me an off-the-cuff story. If you remember back during the holidays, there was a lot of smoke around Tom Allen going to Auburn as the defense coordinator at Auburn. And without getting into too many details of that conversation, let's just say it was a done deal at one point. From how I understand it, they wanted Coach Allen in place immediately, and South Florida had a bowl game to play. And with that being said, Tom wasn't willing to leave his guys before the bowl game. He did the right thing, and ultimately that probably cost him the job of being Auburn's defensive coordinator. But he's back in his home state of Indiana, very, very happy to be there. And we wish him all the well. But, Michael, it's interesting that, you kind of always think about college football as being 124 or so countries engaged in cold wars against one another. That's not the case in the off season, as you see coaching staffs get together and they swap ideas. Now, you're not going to see Ole Miss and LSU have a retreat somewhere where they're trading up offensive philosophies and defensive ideas, but Ole Miss and Indiana, they're not going to play one another, not unless it's in a bowl game, and if that happens, it's probably going to be a disappointing season in Oxford or a very happy, happy season in Bloomington, Indiana. But kind of interesting, wouldn't you say, to see these coaching staffs get together during the off season this time of the year, trade notes, I guess, and talk shop.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that that we've seen in the past. With I believe Chip Kelly went to Alabama and talked some shop with Coach Saban, you're certainly right about that. I'm sure that there's not a lot of there's not a lot of threatening presence going on over there, considering if Ole Miss and Indiana play in a bowl game, Indiana either had a miracle run or Ole Miss had a slew of injuries. So there's not really much to be competing with over there. But, it's certainly interesting. It's something that we see in the NBA now, too, where, you know, we're used to Michael Jordan and Larry Bird hating each other, and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson hating each other, and Charles Oakley wanting to take people's heads off, and now we see Kevin Durant and LeBron James and Dwayne Wade all working out together in the off season, which makes some of the old guys from the league a little angry seeing all these young guns hanging out together, and I'm sure that Bear Bryant and Woody Hayes weren't going to be getting together, but it's certainly a new age.
Well, if Bear Bryant and Woody Hayes are getting together, they're either ghosts or it's going on up in heaven. So, and Michigan fans and Auburn fans would disagree with the location of that meeting, I'm sure. But nevertheless, The walking wounded. We were kind of halfway expecting DeMaurier Stringfellow back on the practice field yesterday. It had been alluded to prior to spring break that he would be out there after spring break. That did not happen yesterday. He still among the walking wounded, was inside the weight room with the strength and conditioning staff as practice was going on. He wasn't the only one in there. Tony Connor, I saw Tony in there working out. Fadal Brown, Rod Taylor, Herbert Moore, all of those guys still amongst the walking wounded. Robert Conyers, I didn't see him in there working out. He was at practice in street clothes yesterday. All of those guys on the road to recovery. Stringfellow, day-to-day. You're not going to see the rest of those this spring, but DeMaurier Stringfellow may get back in time to have some meaningful snaps this spring, and that would be very important as many people think he could be the heir apparent to Laquon Treadwell this fall. But he tried to tell us yesterday after practice in layman's terms what was going on with Stringfellow. There's some blood in the bone, nothing serious. He says everything is going good, and I'll quote him directly here, quote, he has the boot off and he's moving around. Pat said he wasn't ready to go today. That's all I know. It's kind of a weird sprain. They used the term for it, but it's got a little blood in the bone, and they just want to get it all out before he can go. No question, he's feeling a lot better. So hopefully we'll see DeMaurier Stringfellow out there on the field very shortly. As far as practice goes the rest of this week, guys, the Rebels are not practicing today on Tuesday. They will hit the field again on Wednesday and Thursday. No practice on Friday. Will not practice on Monday as that is pro day. And then practice will start again on Tuesday. They have, by my count, 8 practices remaining. By the end of this week, it will be down to 6 practices. And there may be a Saturday practice. I haven't been told about that as of yet. But no practice today. Wednesday and Thursday practice. And then pro day, Monday, March 28th. We're 6 days away. I did get a chance to chat with Ole Miss Sports Information Director Kyle Campbell after practice yesterday, and everyone's expected to be there. The big three, Laquon Treadwell, Robert Kendiche, Laramie Tunsil, they will all participate in Pro Day, as well as a good portion of last year's senior class of Ole Miss Rebels. Mike Hilton will be there. Trey Elston will be there. Fawn Cooper will be there. Fawn and Mike Hilton both inside the Manning Center yesterday at practice. Cooper looks physically very, very good. I don't think I've ever seen him look as good as what he's looking right now. Mike Hilton, hard to get a feel on. He was wearing some baggy kind of clothes yesterday, so can't see what this pre-NFL training has done to his body. But Cooper certainly looked very good. Very good. One note to pass along to you that I didn't get in my notes on the practice report Monday night is because I learned this later. I did notice Jacob Feely left the practice field. He's the senior center out of East Mississippi Community College a little early yesterday. I find out later on in the evening that he is suspected of suffering a shoulder injury, and it could be something that that may sideline him for a little while. And we'll learn more about that as the week progresses and try to get you an official word on Feely. But that's it as far as injuries, as far as my eyes could see yesterday and what was discussed in the post-practice press conference. So, you know, guys, 7 practices in, and you guys are monitoring this as well as anyone. Dave, I mean, we talked about Eric Swinney. We talked about Miles Hartsfield. Who else has stood out to you? And not necessarily just out of that freshman class. Who else is standing out to you right now as somebody that may be on the launching pad of becoming a contributor?
Well, I am going to start with a freshman. And when I was over with, there with you a couple Mondays ago, David, he just stood out to me in the plays that he was making. And with the wide receiver corps so deep, you know, him coming in, it was like, oh, here's Van Jefferson. You know, he redshirted last year. He comes in and he's just making ridiculous catches. And, you know, he's playing remarkably well in the slot. He's an amazing route runner, very polished receiver, and he's been practicing with the one over Markell Pack, you know, who you would, with more experience in there, you would expect him to be in those ones. But in these past several practices, David, it looks to have been Van Jefferson. Freeze has, you know, thrown in, you know, his thoughts on Jefferson and talked about how he's come along, progressed, and has had amazing spring so far.
Yeah, and I would have to agree with you wholeheartedly on Van Jefferson. And you know, would even throw in DeMarcus Lodge, who inexplicably did not redshirt last year. And I'll be honest with you, I just don't have a grasp on that. I don't know why DeMarcus Lodge did not redshirt last year. But he did, nevertheless. Played in seven or eight ball games. Of course, caught a touchdown pass against Tennessee Martin. But that's really the last you heard of DeMarcus Lodge last season. Certainly a very talented wide receiver. I think he's going to be a dangerous red zone weapon for Ole Miss because he high points the football so well. And you can just visualize. Close your eyes and visualize DeMarcus Lodge going up in the corner of the end zone on a fade for a pass from Chad Kelly. I'm telling you, the kid does it as good, I think, as good as anybody in the country. And I think that's going to help Ole Miss when they get into those tough yardage situations inside the opponent's 20, where we've seen drive stall in the past, to have a weapon like DeMarcus Lodge where you can throw it 11 feet up in the air and he's the only guy that's going to go up and get it that high. And there's some help coming in that regard, too, still in this freshman class with guys like A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf that are just going to be incredible weapons. Michael, this Ole Miss wide receiver core, and you know what? I don't think they're going to get their just due in all this preseason propaganda that's about to start flooding everybody's newsstand and internet, where all these people from 800 miles away are making their preseason predictions on Ole Miss. I think the wide receiving core will not get the credit it deserves as deep and talented as it is because Laquon Treadwell is no longer there. But in my humble opinion, the Ole Miss wide receiver core is, you're not going to replace Laquon Treadwell. Let me say that. He's special. But as a unit, I don't think they're going to fall off any, none whatsoever. I think as a unit they could be better than what they've been in the last few years. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. It's sort of strange when you see so many prognosticators from national media outlets who say, "Oh, Ole Miss is going to have trouble replacing Laramie Tunsil." Of course, that's accurate. I mean, there is experience on the offensive line, and of course, you have Greg Little coming in. But it's hard to replace a guy like Tunsil, who figures to be an All-Pro in the NFL for years to come. And then they say it's going to be hard for Ole Miss to replace Robert Kimdichie, which sort of overlooks how deep the defensive line is, and then of course say it's going to be hard to replace Laquon Treadwell. I really think the receiver is a strong point. They've recruited incredibly well there. You still have DeMaurier Stringfellow, who became Chad Kelly's favorite target toward the end of the year. You saw the Mississippi State game. He was staring down DeMaurier quite a bit. And then you have, of course, you have Quincy Adeboyo. You have Derek Jones. You have Markell Pack. You have Van Jefferson, DeMarcus Lodge, A.J. Brown, Trey Nixon, D.K. Metcalf. I'm certain that I'm missing some guys, but it's they're receiving targets all over the field. I don't think Chad Kelly has once looked around this offseason and thought, "Hey, I don't have anyone to throw to here."
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, Kelly very complimentary of Van Jefferson and DeMarcus Lodge and those guys yesterday. And we all know how it goes. I mean, look at the Ole Miss baseball team. Guys who are not here covering this team have the loudest voice when it comes to formulating preseason prognostications about this team. Nobody picked the phone up and called Michael Quirk and asked him, "Hey, Michael, what do you think about Ole Miss as a preseason top 25 team?" Very few, if any, are going to call me and say, hey, we're about to put our preseason magazine out. Is Ole Miss really going to be hurting at wide receiver and on the defensive line? They're going to make assumptions. And those assumptions are easy to make when you go, well, they lost Robert Kimdichie. They don't have another one of him. They lost Laquan Treadwell. They don't have another one of him. They lost Laramie Tunsil. They certainly don't have another one of him. They're going to fall off this year. They're going to fall back. They're going to be a fourth-place team in the West. Because it doesn't matter what Alabama loses, and it doesn't matter what LSU loses. And part of this is simply because of history. There are going to be people out there who just quite haven't reached that mindset yet that Ole Miss football has returned to some level of prominence, excuse me, and certainly some level of competitiveness inside the SEC West. It just hasn't registered. Their historical, their institutional knowledge is framed up in 1988, and that's just something that only winning will overcome. Now, I do think Hugh Freeze has done a great job of getting this program recognition, and people are catching on. I think ESPN and their way too early preseason top 25 has Ole Miss is number 13. But who's ahead of them? Who's number 12? And I really scratched my head on this one, guys, and I want you to weigh in on this. Tennessee. Tennessee in the ESPN way too early preseason top 25 is ranked 12. Ole Miss is ranked number 13. What in the world makes anyone think Butch Jones and the Tennessee Volunteers are in a better situation and are better off than what Hugh Freeze has going in Oxford, Mississippi? I can't see it. Dave, enlighten me. Tell me why the national media, those talking heads out there, it's trending towards Tennessee. Tennessee's going to be great. They have arrived. Tell me why.
You know, Tennessee has had some good recruiting classes, but so has Ole Miss over the past couple of years. And Tennessee, you know, I don't believe they're losing that much depth. But and Michael had already chimed in on this. You know, the national view of it is you're replacing the big three at Ole Miss: Laramie Tunsil, Laquan Treadwell, and Robert Kimdichie. And you know, the myth knowledge of that is that Ole Miss has over the years developed that defensive line, offensive line, and then they have, you know, a promising prospect coming into the fall in Greg Little on the offensive line. A year ago, Ole Miss, you know, it was right about, you know, the preseason, somewhere around the 15-17 preseason top 25 ranking. And the biggest headline in the national media was, what is Ole Miss going to do to replace Bo Wallace? You know, with the supposed three-man battle between Ryan Buchanan, Devontae Kincaid, and Chad Kelly. At that point, Chad Kelly was unproven on the field in SEC play. He had dominated the record books in his year season in the junior college level at Northeast. And then he comes into, you know, Ole Miss and has a phenomenal year. If Chad Kelly had already been a year into the program, he probably, and had that success that he did last year, the year before, he probably would be, you know, in that Heisman talk like he is going into this preseason. I think that was, you know, with the yardage that he had, was why he never really got into that Heisman discussion outside of, you know, the early interception cues, you know, the 12 interceptions. That was, you know, a bad stat to the eye. But when the beginning of the season was, he was unproven. Now he's proven himself, and I think that's why they're going to have a little bit more preseason look with that 13th ranking.
Well, I don't know if I asked for all of that, but you're dead on. You're exactly right. But my take is, I mean, here we go again, you know, and I don't know why I have a burr in my shoe about Tennessee, but to be preseason ranked higher than this Ole Miss team. I don't get it, other than it being simply the fact that a lot of the talking heads are just going, well, they don't have Treadwell, they don't have Tendici, they don't have Tunsil. So they can't be as good as what they were last year. Now, I agree, losing those guys, that hurts. But when you look at the defensive line, and you've got DJ Jones, you've got Fadal Brown, you've got Marquise Haynes, you have, who am I leaving out here, Breland Speaks, you have Isaac Gross, who's on the comeback trail. That defensive line may be better without Robert Kimdichie. And you go, whoa, what did he just say? But it could very well be better. DJ Jones got a year of SEC experience under his belt. Breland Speaks, he started to flash last year as someone with possible pro potential as a defensive tackle. You know Marquise Haynes is one of the best pass rushers in the nation. And Fadal Brown, certainly a guy who will be in NFL conversations following this fall as to whether or not he can play on the next level, and I think he can. So from a defensive line standpoint, I don't see the big hole left in the bucket of water with Robert Kimdichie leaving. At the wide receiver position, you could somewhat make the same argument, though I will say Laquon Treadwell is the most special wide receiver to ever played here, and there's bound to be some hiccup not having number one on the field. But with that said, the wide receiver core is going to be thicker, deeper. Maybe I don't say more talented, but there is plenty of talent in that wide receiver core. To me, the glaring spot, and you may not feel this way, if Greg Little had been a January enrollee and was going through spring practice and we were talking about him like we're talking about Miles Hartsfield and Eric Sweeney, you might not feel that way, but right now that left tackle spot is what you kind of just kind of squeam about just a little bit. But I will say this, Jeremy Liggins is looking good out there in spring ball. Alex Givens is looking good out there in spring ball. Sean Rawlings certainly capable of playing tackle as he started the first seven games at that position last year. Now, the question with Rawlings is whether or not the Rebels can afford to not play him at center, and that's dependent upon how Robert Conyers comes back. Conyers, another guy that could be a hand at the tackle spot. So there is depth there. There's not a Laramie Tunsil there yet. But there is depth at the tackle spot. So all of these people, you know, kicking Ole Miss back a little bit in the top 25 parade. And I think that's the primary reason they're doing it is they're losing a lot of talent. And we talk about the big three, but they're also losing Fant Cooper. Cooper's going to be drafted. They're also losing Cody Core out of that wide receiver core. Core is going to be drafted. And so at least five Rebels going to be drafted. And then you've got some guys who are borderline guys who may can hook on with the NFL club like C.J. Johnson, Trey Elston. Trey Elston is perplexing to me why he did not get an invitation to the NFL combine.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't figured that out. Mm-hmm. All SEC, all American, playmaker will light your butt up. No invite to the NFL combine. C.J. Johnson got invited, and honestly, I would have thought Elston would have went before CJ, Michael. Am I right or wrong about that?
I could not agree with you more strongly on that. That was perplexing to me. CJ Johnson, you know, in the NFL, you have a very short shelf life, and so you want to get these guys when they're 20 years old, if possible, 21, and you have CJ Johnson, a six-year senior, who he is a tremendous leader on and off the field, and is a productive player and talented, but he's older than most in the draft pool, and he also has extensive injury history. And, you know, I mean, he had a solid year last year, but he didn't really light the world on fire like he did earlier in his Ole Miss career when he was at DN. And then you had Trey Elston, who seemed like he got better every single year he was at Ole Miss. It was sort of the Terrence Henry of the football world, where you just felt like every single year – he felt more comfortable with Elston back there. He was sort of a liability in coverage early on in his career. And then he was really flying to the football and really playing really well in zone coverage last year and really looked great out there. And like you said, all SEC, all American, and really is just one of the hardest hitters we've seen that I can remember at Ole Miss since maybe Damian Jackson a few years ago. Just really lays the wood back there. I think we all remember that UTEP hit. I believe it's freshman year when it was named the SEC Hit of the Week by the Southeastern Conference, and then a couple days later he was suspended for it. I saw projections that had him going as high as third or fourth round. They didn't get invited to the combine. I'm sure that's going to give him an even bigger chip on his shoulder, and he's going to have a heck of a pro day. And I certainly expect to see him get drafted. I'd be surprised if he falls out of it.
Yeah, you know, but I've learned not to trust those projections, particularly after last year with Cody Pruitt being projected as high as a third-round pick and then not getting drafted at all. And I haven't confirmed this. I'm being led to believe Cody will participate in Pro Day this year. He has been at every practice I've been at, so he is camped out in Oxford working out at the Manning Center, and certainly looks very, very good. So he may be one. Was told there just aren't a lot of wild cards, former players coming back or anything like that for this year's Pro Day. Usually you see some guys who may have been gone for a season or two, and they've kind of wandered around, and they can certainly come back to their alma mater and participate in Pro Day, but it's not the case this year. The only guy I know like that is coming back will be Sir'Darrius Bryant. He will be here Monday to participate in Pro Day. We were told that yesterday. Love to see Bird. Bird was always one of my favorite players. If you looked at him and sized him up with your eyeballs, no way he should be playing in the SEC with his height deference. I guess is the way to say it. But he was a tackling machine, and I would certainly wish him well at Pro Day. But and we did clarify this. I specifically asked this question yesterday of Kyle Campbell, because it had to be asked, because it was going to be asked on the board. Will Nick Brazel be at Ole Miss Pro Day Monday? The answer is no. Nick Brazel will not be here. And it seems like Brazel made a point to show back up even after he left for every Pro Day. But not on the roster for Monday. We don't have the official roster yet. That should be coming a little bit later this week. All right, let's do a little rapid-fire thing here. Dave, I'll put you on the spot here. I want your SEC West football predictions 1-7. How is it going to finish up this year?
SEC West?
Yeah, that's actually the division for you. Southeastern Conference.
All right. SEC West, I'm going to go with Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas. I'm going to go with Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and who am I leaving out?
Auburn.
Auburn. Auburn.
So what you're basically saying is Gus Malzahn will no longer be the head coach at Auburn by January.
That quarterback position is still concerning.
I agree. I think you're dead on right there. Auburn does not have a quarterback. And you know, hope springs eternal this time of the year for the guy you brought in. Sometimes it works out, a la Chad Kelly. Sometimes it doesn't. That's a big gamble right there for Gus Malzahn and Auburn heading into the fall. All right, Michael, 1-7, how do they stack up?
I'm going with a three-way tie at the top between LSU, Ole Miss, and Alabama. And then fourth, I've got Mississippi State. Fifth, I've got Arkansas. Sixth, I've got Auburn. And in last in the SEC West, I got Texas A&M.
Wow. Well, I'll lay it out like this. I'm going number one, Alabama. Why? They're just enchanting, okay? I'm not saying Ole Miss won't beat them for the third consecutive year here in Oxford. But, you know, they are the crown prince of college football. And they can step in doo-doo early in the season and sling it right off their feet and be golden-toed by the end of the year. They're just simply enchanted. I'm going Alabama 1. Number 2, Ole Miss. And if Bama happens to step in doo-doo more than once next year, I would put Ole Miss number 1, but I got to see it to believe it. So 1, Alabama. 2, Ole Miss. Number 3, I'm going LSU. Simply based on the talent that Les Miles has in Baton Rouge. He has the Auburn problem. There ain't no quarterback down there. No proven one. We can say that much. But LSU's got enough talent all over the field that no reason they couldn't be competitive, and if they get hot, they could always have a special season. But I'm putting them in the third slot. Number four, and this is where things kind of get murky, but I'm going with Auburn at number four, simply because, as Dave said, quarterback situation is problematic down there, but Gus Malzahn's a fighter, and he's fighting for his job right now. I promise you, he's fighting for his job. If Auburn were to finish last in the West, the Gus bus is out of gas, and he would be gone. My fifth-place team, Arkansas, and they lost a lot, but you know that chubby fellow over there named Bielema, he can coach football, and his guys play hard, and they're tough. So I'm putting them at five. Number six, Texas A&M, another guy who has put his own back against the wall, Kevin Sumlin. You let two five-star quarterbacks leave your program over the offseason. The Aggies aren't winning enough to satisfy their fan base. Kevin Sumlin, they're going to fight hard this year. I think he stays out of the cellar. And, again, it's kind of an LSU situation. There's talent in College Station. Don't fool yourself to think there's not. There may not be a pair of five-star quarterbacks, but they've got talent there. And number seven, Mississippi State. I just look at Mississippi State, and I see the losses that they have sustained over the offseason. And it all starts with Dak Prescott, who they will tell you is the greatest football player in their history. And you lose the greatest football player in your history, and there really isn't an heir apparent. There's no one on that team that can do the things Prescott could do. I don't see a very strong running game at Mississippi State. The last we saw of their offensive line, it was pretty much a dumpster fire. Wide receivers, Terunye Wilson was the best. Not a very impressive NFL combine showing for him. So I think Mississippi State will struggle to score a lot of points in an SEC West division that's kind of become all about scoring a lot of points. So I think they wrap it up and they'll be in the cellar. Now, what does the cellar mean inside the SEC West? Probably 2-6, but 6-6 overall. So it would not surprise me to see all seven SEC West teams go to a bowl game. Therefore, all seven, to some degree of success, can pound their chest a little bit. There won't be any chest pounding at Auburn because they live in the same state as Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide and finish fourth, if that's where they do finish. That won't be anything that they'll smile about, so to speak. I mean, they want to be back, and they want to be back in a big way, and I just don't think that's going to happen. Dave's got them finishing dead last. I don't know if that'll happen either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be fun to see. Now, where will the Rebels be picked by most of these preseason magazines? You know, we'll throw Lindy's in there and Athlon's and Sports Illustrated and all of these preseason talking heads. My guess is third or fourth in most of the preseason polls. Guys, would you agree with that? I mean, it's almost like they're instantly going to write down Alabama and LSU, and then they'll kind of figure out the rest of the West. That's what I'm expecting. Dave?
Yeah, I would agree with you, David. Third or fourth, that's where most of your preseasons, what I would see is picking Ole Miss, and it goes back to what we've said previously is, you know, misunderstanding the depth that has built over the you know, the course of the past couple of years. And LSU has a lot of talent. There's some proven talent, as you mentioned. You know, the quarterback situation, there's some question marks there, but you know, I could see that preseason, you know, back and forth of second and third with LSU. And then Alabama, your returning national champions, you know, I just do not see any national preseason predictions taking Alabama out of, you know, finishing first in the SEC West. I'm interested to, you know, upcoming summer with SEC Media Days, if Alabama in a different SEC West team. One will be predicted to win the West, and the other will be predicted to win the championship game, like last year with Alabama and Auburn in the SEC media predictions.
I'm going to make a prediction that Alabama is going to be the clean sweep this year. Wouldn't surprise me. All right, Michael, let me ask you this. We were talking about Tennessee earlier in the broadcast. If Tennessee were playing in the West, where would they finish? Where would they finish this season? Where do you see Butch Jones and his brick-by-brick effort rolling in into the SEC West standings?
I think a lot that you're seeing about Tennessee being picked so high in a lot of polls, a lot of prognostications, is because it's a pretty safe pick. The SEC East figures to be far weaker than the West again this year. You're not sure what the quarterback situation's like at Florida. Of course, we saw the Will Grier era was very different than the post-Will Grier era. And now they've even moved Treon Harris elsewhere. So Tennessee, especially their schedule is very front-loaded. The back end has, you know, Kentucky and Vanderbilt and a lot of wins at the back there. And so I think that that a lot that you're seeing about Tennessee is about their schedule and the fact that they have, of course, Josh Dobbs coming back. But I think if you put them in the West, I certainly think if you look at the rosters, you look at the trajectory, you look at the coaching staff, I don't see a better team there than Ole Miss, than LSU, than Alabama. I think that they would be in fourth. I do think that they're a better team than Tennessee or Auburn or A&M or maybe Arkansas. You saw they had a close game with Arkansas last year, but I'd go with fourth for them.
Yeah, I kind of feel that as well. I think they would squarely be behind Alabama, Ole Miss, and LSU going into the preseason. But since they are in the SEC least or East, whichever you want to refer to it, and not in the SEC West or Best, and that's just how the cycle is right now. The West has the best football. That probably helps their standing in folks' minds when you're talking about Tennessee nationally. But I don't know. That's just kind of setting the table for the excitement that's going to roll around this fall. And, guys, I mean, it gets closer and closer every single day. Certainly excited about the prognosis for your Ole Miss Rebels this year. What a whopper, what a wing-dang doodle of a game on September the 5th in Orlando, Florida, against Florida State, who, by the way, in that ESPN way too early preseason poll, ranked number 2 in the nation behind Alabama. Man. And look, I'll tell you this. I had a conversation with Coach Tom Allen about Florida State yesterday in the Florida State-Ole Miss game. And of course, South Florida played Florida State. And Tom Allen's very familiar. Very good football team, he says. But at the same time, they're not unbeatable. So this is a game where, let's just say, Ole Miss does start the season 13th and Florida State starts at 2nd. Ole Miss fans, you're going to be glad you played that game if you win it. If you win that game, you're going to skyrocket up the polls right after week one. And then you're going to beat Washington. And then you're going to stay there. And then you got Alabama coming to town in what will be Earthquake Central, the epicenter for college football on the third Saturday in September, right here in Oxford, Mississippi. Y'all remember that game when Katy Perry came to town? Of course you do. That will be nothing compared to the hype, the preseason hype for Ole Miss Alabama. If the Rebels have knocked off Florida State 2-0 and Alabama rolls into town 2-0, oh, my goodness. I mean, you better get here. You better leave church Wednesday night and head to Oxford for Saturday's Ole Miss-Alabama game, or you're liable to not get in town. That's how big of a game that will be. Am I wrong on that, Dave?
No. I remember walking through the Grove in 2014 when Alabama came to town. I was not a member of the media in going into that game, and David, I parked in a random guy's driveway, paid him $20 parking his driveway, good 10 miles from the stadium. Walked a good five.
10 miles from the stadium. 10 miles.
Yes.
Five miles.
To the nearest bus shuttle, and then got to the bus shuttle. Now the bus shuttle, they will drive you straight up right in front of the front entrance there at Vault Hemingway. But yeah, I mean that's a 5 mile walk from there, and then you pay another $20, you know, for the bus ride for the stadium. So yeah, we looked forever for parking spots, and I'm telling you, it will be, you know, everything is made into a parking spot in every little corner, every little neighborhood. When a big SEC team comes to town, and it doesn't get any bigger with Alabama coming to town. I mean, you're heading into this game. Ole Miss is 2-0 over the past 2 years, and looking to make it 3-0. This could be something, you know, historic in the making. So, and with that new expansion, oh man, David, you know, it's going to be packed there.
It'll be like a snow day in the grocery stores in Oxford, except instead of bread and milk not being on the shelves, beer and bratwurst will be in high demand that weekend, that entire week. But Ole Miss has got to take care of business down in Orlando. And again, if they do, I would imagine the CBS executives and the ESPN executives will have a live ammo shooting duel to see who gets to carry that game. College Game Day, of course, would be here, but CBS picking first, I would imagine it would be at 2:30 in the afternoon kickoff. But don't you know ESPN would love to show that Joker prime time, 8 o'clock at night. The ratings would be phenomenal for that game, both at 2-0. And remember, if Ole Miss has gone to Orlando and knocked off Florida State, they're in the top five as well. So, yeah, well, I don't think we'll have ever seen a matchup like that if the Rebels can handle. It's going to be big no matter what happens in Orlando. But if they knock off the Seminoles, it's the biggest game I think the state of Mississippi has ever hosted. Not just football. Throw all the sports in there as far as national attention goes. So we have that. All right, it's time for closing thoughts, and we'll start it off with you, Michael Quirk. Closing thoughts on this Tuesday, March 22nd.
I am currently rolling into the Ole Miss campus now, about to walk over to Swayze Field. And, of course, it's Education Day, 11 a.m. start, and as some of our subscribers may know, I used to work in minor league baseball in Charleston, South Carolina, and there were education days at the ballpark, and I don't think I've ever heard SpongeBob SquarePants so many times in my life. And so if I don't get much sleep tonight and I'm a little groggy on tomorrow's podcast, it's probably because I was rolling over all night trying to get to sleep while SpongeBob SquarePants is haunting my dreams. As that theme song just gets in your head and doesn't leave.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you, with my two-year-old, I have SpongeBob haunting my dreams all the time. SpongeBob, mm-hmm. The Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Dora the Explorer, dominate the airwaves at the Johnson household. And I will say this, though. The writers on SpongeBob, brilliant. I mean, they get in-depth sometimes. Sometimes I'm like cliffhanging on the commercial break for SpongeBob. And that may be too much information for you guys, but it is the truth. Sometimes I get engaged in watching the children's programs. Guess you have to. But nevertheless. Dave Quirk.
Dave Quirk.
Dave Bevin. You guys haven't gotten married yet. So I'm jumping the gun on that, and assuming Dave would take Michael's last name. So anyway,
I hate to spoil it for Michael, but I'm already taken happily married already. But
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going
to
go into
my thoughts. That will be the litmus test to see who listened to the entire episode of the podcast, because there's definitely going to be some remarks show up under it about that.
I'm waiting on the comments. Yes.
All right.
Rick, we're degenerating.
All right, March Madness. We got to talk about March Madness, David. It's been an exciting one so far, and been keeping up with my bracket. It just fell apart, and I know many across the nation fell apart in the round of 64 when Michigan State got knocked off, number two seed getting knocked off Middle Tennessee. Round of 32 was pretty exciting. Texas A&M, I think that was probably the most thrilling matchup, beating Northern Iowa. Coming back, I believe it was a 12-point deficit in the final 45 seconds of the game. Come back and win, I believe it was 92-88 in that final. A number one seed hasn't been knocked out yet. Kentucky was dominated by Indiana. I kind of expected that, but Texas A&M hanging in there for the SEC in the Sweet 16, and they're going to have a challenge come March 24th, a couple days from now, when they play Oklahoma. That will be a challenge. Number two and number three seed, it should be very good. North Carolina, Indiana, that game is going to be a real good one as well.
So a not-so-fantastic finish for John Calipari and his Kentucky Wildcats. And of all the teams, and at one point in the season, it looked like A&M had really just kind of hit the skids, but they've gotten hot. And that's the SEC's lone hope. And we'll save this for another episode, perhaps even tomorrow. But we've got to talk about the SEC and their basketball prowess. What can they do to change it? Because it's not just an image thing. Guys, it's real. It's flat-out real. Mm-hmm. The SEC is not up to par when it comes to men's basketball. And on a year when Kentucky is not Kentucky, boy, it really shows up. So we'll have to save that for another episode. I guess I've revealed my closing thought already. So that'll do it for us on this edition of the Rebel Rise Live podcast. As always, we want to thank you all for giving us a part of your day and joining us here. And as always, hotty toddy to you. So for Michael Quirk, Dave Bevan, at 247 Sports, I'm David Johnson. See you next time.